Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley. I am your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. And I'm so happy because one of my most favorite guests, Dr. Dudley Danoff, is back again. It's been a while, Dr. Danoff, but you're here. I think this is your 10th visit going back to 2014,
you know,
on
like,
Love, Lust, and Laughter.
It's like being married a long time, Deanna. Who's counting?
Well, we always seem to have a good time together. And this is the day that the second edition of your book, The Ultimate Guide to Male Sexual Health, How to Stay Vital at Any Age, just out today, the second edition.
Yeah, that's right. It's a new publisher, and it's an imprint of Simon & Schuster, and I'm very proud of that, and it looks like it's going to be translated into a number of languages, so we're beginning to get the message out, you and I together.
Yes, well, and I know you're doing other media presentations, too. You're really a great guest.
Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome, because you're so... You know so much. How many years have you been working as a urologist?
Oh, my gosh. I started after my military service and training, I started here in Los Angeles at UCLA and Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in 1971. So you do the math.
It's that makes you very experienced. And you've also been married to such a lovely woman. I had the pleasure of saying hello to both of you in person at the Monterey Quad S or ASEC conference.
I have been actually married 45 years. I have grown. We have grown children, 3 grandchildren, and my wife still has a very active career, which I think is, you know, a very important part of why we still like each other and hold hands once in a while.
Yes, it's clear you like each other. And you are the founder of, the president and founder of the Cedars-Sinai Tower Urology Medical Group in Los Angeles. And having lived in Los Angeles about 10 years ago, I know it's a big place, Cedars-Sinai.
Yeah, well, Cedars-Sinai is an interesting hospital. It's a 1,000-bed community teaching hospital. It treats the Beverly Hills, West Hollywood, West Side community. We have full-time training programs, a huge research facility, multi-billion-dollar institution. And my group of 12 urologists practices on the campus of the Cedars-Sinai Medical Center. We do all of our surgery at the Cedars-Sinai Medical Center. We admit all of our patients. So we have a very symbiotic relationship over these many years with Cedars-Sinai, and we're very proud of it. And we are a brand name in Southern California.
Yes, you are. And you have some well-known patients who have commented on your book with their names.
There's a new one on the. I don't know if you have a copy of the new one, but
no.
On, right on the cover, there's a quote by Bill Maher. And, you know, I don't know whether you like him or don't like him, but you know, a lot of people do.
He's very quick and bright.
And so he said, "There's no shame in wanting the fun parts to work right." This book goes a long way in telling you how, Bill Maher. Now, when I asked him, he's a patient of mine and a friend, so he gave me a much racier quote, you know, in the typical lingo of Bill Maher, and I said, Bill, I can't put that on the cover of the book. Can you tone it down a bit? And of course he did, and I was very honored that he did it. Larry King liked the book and gave me a nice quote. Johnny Mathis liked the book, gave me a nice quote.
Well, I want to just read those two quotes real quickly for the listening audience. Larry King, Dr. Danoff's book is the best I've ever read on this most important subject. Every man should read it. So should women. And And that's really true. You have a lot of good information for women, too.
Oh, absolutely. I want every woman in the world to be a penis professor. I want them to know how the penis in their life works, why it works, where it works, how it works. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff in there for women. I actually have a one whole chapter devoted to women, although advice to men and women is throughout the book. But, yeah, we love women.
Well, sure. And women love to be loved, and we love our men to really pay attention to us, sexually and otherwise. So I'll just read Johnny Mathis's quote. At last, it is great to see a volume that produces such a constant flow of information. The information fills every void on the subject and finally exposes the long and short of it.
So obviously, there's a double entendre there. And
sure.
Of course, anybody who knows Johnny Mathis, he's not noted for his sense of humor.
Yeah. So he's being playful a little bit there. I like it.
Last
quote, because I, you know, one of the things I miss about living in Los Angeles was going to Spago, Wolfgang Puck's restaurant. And of course, he's probably worldwide, but he's certainly nationwide and in airports and all of that.
Yes.
And he wrote, Dr. Danoff, a world-class urologist, has written a world-class book that should be read by every man and woman who enjoy sex. Hear, hear. Now, for our listening audience, if you're a guy or if you're a woman with a question about your guy, and if you are the first caller, you'll call in and talk to our producer, Chelsea, and she'll do a little pre-screen, and you'll let her know what your question is. If you're the first caller, you get a free copy of Dr. Danoff's book, The Ultimate Guide to Male Sexual Health, How to Stay Vital at Any Age. So you'll want to stay on the air after we chat, and you ask Dr. Danoff your question, because Chelsea will write down your name and address, and then we'll get that to Dr. Danoff's PR person. Right, Dr. Danoff?
With pleasure, Deanna, with pleasure.
Okay, great, great. And it really is such an accessible book with really practical, no-nonsense advice for both genders, lot of information about erectile dysfunction, potency, and the prostate, and lots of tips for a healthy, active sex life at any age. And the advantage that you and I have when we talk about these matters is that we both practice what we preach, and I think that makes us much more authentic and relatable, because we like sex with our mates.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's nothing beats it. You know what they say? What is the difference between professional wrestling and sex? And the answer is, in sex, there are no holds, H-O-L-D-S, barred.
Oh, that's very good, yes.
So that anything goes, safe sex, be adventuresome, you know.
Yes.
Put boredom.
Which is a pretty good segue, because one of the things that I do like about your book, and I thought we could start with this, five ways to reinvigorate your love life. You know, I'd say the most common presenting problem in my practice, and I usually call them clients, not patients, but sometimes patients, the same thing, is that they are bored. And sometimes there are pain issues for the woman. So you have mismatched desire, but there also boredom is set in. And that's your first tip, the five ways. And you say, keep boredom out of the bedroom. Can you expand on that a little bit? And I'll jump in, too, with some of my ideas.
Well, certainly as a urologist, I can't emphasize this point enough. You have to do everything in your power to prevent sex from becoming a dull routine. Nothing will bring passion and romance back to a long-term relationship faster than a change in sexual practice or venue. So keep it fresh, keep it new, keep it different, keep it surprising. So certainly keeping boredom out of the bedroom is one of the first things that come to mind, certainly to reinvigorate, not only to reinvigorate your sex life, but to keep it going.
And you and I both suggest getaways, escapes for couples. And, find somebody to watch the kids. If you have kids at home, go out and remind yourself that you are husband and wife, not just mom and dad. It's really important.
Yeah, no question. Rent that little cabin up in the woods. No kids, no phone, no television. Just, two of you in the fireplace. That should do the trick. Be romantic.
Yes. And I would also add, leave your devices off. The smartphones.
Yeah.
We know from a number of studies that smartphones fragment human consciousness. And it's really become a problem.
Yeah, a group of the doctors today, we were talking about what cell phones are doing. You know, Deanna, how unfortunate it is we sometimes go out, you or I, to a romantic restaurant, and you look across the room, a romantic setting, and you see a young, very attractive couple, and each one of the couple is engrossed in their cell phone, pecking away and completely avoiding each other. I mean, the loss of intimacy, the loss of the moment, and to be so engaged in this device, I mean, it's almost a death knell to intimacy. So, you got to get rid of that cell phone. Lock it up.
it's been called absent presence. You're not really there.
Yeah. You must be.
And John Gottman, who's done 40 years of relationship research, he talks about bids for connection. And he points out that the real danger is that people are checking their devices so often that they're not even noticing a partner's bid for connection.
For sure.
And it's really a death knell to emotional intimacy and then later physical intimacy.
And the death knell to what is commonly called social intercourse. The inability to communicate, to tell a joke, to provoke a human emotion, crying, laughter.
Right.
It's sad. But let's get back to invigorating your sex life.
Yes,
so the second thing I like to emphasize is give yourself permission to try something new.
Mm-hmm.
Take the afternoon, surprise your wife with flowers or a sunset tryst in a motel. You make believe it's your first date. Have sex in the kitchen. Before you brush your teeth and get in your jammies, have sex instead of doing it the other way around. Something fresh, something new, something surprising. That'll get things reinvigorated.
Absolutely. And I think the key to an exciting sex life is novelty. And for dopamine to be expressed, the hormone of arousal, it needs some novelty because we all crave new and different experiences. And I agree with you, take sex out of the bedroom and start foreplay somewhere new.
There's a little old experiment. I think I talk about it in the book.
Yes.
It's a male and a female mouse in the same cage. The female mouse is in heat, so the male mouse will mount the female mouse frequently, each time there's an ejaculation, there's a refractory period, and then the refractory periods, grow longer and longer in proportion to the activity of the mouse until a poor male mouse drops over in exhaustion and lying in the mouse cage. And now if you take that female mouse out of the mouse cage and you paint her with a different mouse color and you spray her with a different mouse perfume and you put that same female back in the cage, the male mouse will mount her almost in the same way and in the same proportion and in the same level of activity as the first time around. So
yes.
That says something about animal behavior, which I think can be transmitted or reflected in human behavior. Try something new. Try something fresh.
And let me say at this point in time, just as soon as the siren goes by down outside my window, this is, and I don't, you know, not very many places in the Pacific Northwest have air conditioning, believe it or not, but we're warm up here in Seattle now. Anyway, so the windows are open. So I wanted to just mention, if any of you listening, and if you're the first caller, you need to call 888-874-4888, and you can ask Dr. Danoff a question, if you have a question. Right
don't
now,
be bashful. I mean, I've heard all the questions that can be asked. I try to answer all of them. Sometimes they stump me, but not very often.
I'm sure of it. And how many penises have you seen in your professional life?
Golly, it is probably more than can fill a Rose Bowl.
Yeah, right.
And it's surprising how much they're alike.
Yes, how much the penises. They don't differ a lot, but of course they differ in functionality.
Well, also they function differently depending on the attitude of the owner. So if the owner is a nabab of negativity, he's going to have a negatively functioning penis. And if he's enthusiastic and confident and has this power of positive thinking, he's going to be King Penis.
The first title that you used in your first edition was Penis Power, The Ultimate Guide to Male Sexual Health.
Yeah. So
and then you have said that penis can be a pejorative word, which really seems silly to me, but
So the sort of the birth of this book, it comes about 15 or 20 years ago when a patient came to my office and said, I have a great idea and a title for a book. You're a good communicator. And he held up a 3x card, said, Penis Power. And I said, this was before the Internet, before Howard Stern, before the ad on television, if your erection lasts longer than 4 hours, call your doctor. Well, heck. If mine lasted more than 4 hours, I'd call everybody I know.
Yeah.
But that beside the point, I said, wow, what a great title.
Yeah.
And I wrote the book, and there was great, great, great pushback from the mainstream press. And I would almost always have to get on radio, television, print, and say, you know, look, penis is not a pejorative word. It's a body part. It's to the urologist what an elbow is to the orthopedist. Get over it.
Yeah.
And I was astounded in the 21st century, astounded about the pushback over that word. And it's been my goal over the last 15 years and now the third book to try to sort of, quote, get the penis out of the closet, get people to feel comfortable talking about it, get men willing to go for their annual physical examination, their PSA. I mean, why can't a man be more like a woman? What woman would miss her annual pap smear or her breast examination? And men are pushed and pulled, and they're macho. They don't want to admit any crack in the armor. They don't want to admit to any frailties or perceived weaknesses. You know, it's terrible.
It's sad because then the man also often has too much performance pressure, and that can lead to erectile dysfunction.
Yeah, performance anxiety is a killer. It's a negative, and we've talked about this before, and mm-hmm. you've referred to it many times, I know, in your writings and in your programs, the negative feedback loop. I mean, mm-hmm. if you have one little bit of negativity or self-doubt, it's self-fulfilling prophecy. It's like the dog, chasing its tail around in ever-decreasing circles until it disappears up his you-know-what.
Mm-hmm.
No negativity, no doubt, no. Don't put yourself in a position where you have performance anxiety. All men fail. Maybe not in a porno movie, but doesn't always work the way we want it to work. You don't take that seriously. You get yourself up, you brush yourself off, and you start all over again.
Yeah, you brought up pornography, and I just wanted to interject this, that studies have shown that couples who view pornography together as partners find it easier to discuss their sexual desires and fantasy. Now, they may have to choose more female-oriented porn, female pleasure-oriented, and they're often made by producers like Erica Lust. And my late friend, Candida Royale, she made a lot of wonderful movies for couples to watch, a little bit of a plot, and yet they're explicit. And I've noticed that a woman can live with a partner's porn use as long as she sees that it is not a mark against her. I mean, a lot of women get upset because they find their partner looking at porn and they don't have a body that even looks similar to the actress's body, and they're also doing things in the porn movie that she and her husband have done. But the positive side of it, as I said, it can stimulate. If you watch together, it can stimulate discussion.
No, I would not dispute that. I'm no expert on, mutual porn watching, but porn has its place, but it also can create a lot of anxiety in a man because he looks up there, he sees, a slender guy with a washboard belly, mm-hmm. An oversized organ or what appears to be an oversized organ, and he begins to feel inadequate. When he has to realize that, these are the rare end of the breed, they run the film backward, they start in the middle, there's lighting, there's angles, so it's hardly a realistic portrayal of lovemaking, no matter how you cut it and slice it.
Oh, that's very true, and also, apparently, Viagra is often dispensed on pornography sets.
Oh, there's
and,
no question.
And then the films, oh my goodness, sirens. Then the films are edited. They're edited so much.
Oh, of course. Oh, edited, run backward. Mm-hmm. There's no question about it. So not only is Viagra and Cialis readily available on the set, but a lot of the pornography actors use what's called injectables,
mm-hmm.
where they actually self-inject what's called prostaglandin E1.
Mm-hmm.
That's a vasoactive substance, very, very potent, used
mm-hmm.
in extreme cases of erectile dysfunction secondary to circulatory failure. But these are healthy guys injecting themselves, getting an instant erection that lasts an inordinate amount of time. Those are dangerous. They could lead to priapism, which is devastating. But these
and
fellas
that's where
are,
the erection won't go down. And that's actually, jokes aside, that's why men
right.
are advised to go to the emergency room if it lasts more than 4 hours.
Absolutely. There's no
yeah.
question. I mean, it is not a joke. But porn actors abuse these drugs.
I wonder if it leads to erectile dysfunction without
can.
It.
Oh, can. I mean, these
yeah.
many of these drugs that are used recreationally and dangerously, have a place in our treatment of erectile dysfunction when used in the proper setting. But very often times they're used in a very risky and dangerous way.
Yes.
At the end of the day, what I'm trying
to remember,
say is... I said at the end of the day, I think what I'm trying to say is what we see by and large in pornography is not the real deal. And if one tries to hold themselves up to the standards of what they see on the small screen, I think you're going to create a lot of anxiety and performance anxiety and all of the things that emanate from that. So be careful.
And by the way, you people listening, you can use a name other than your real name, and you're pretty anonymous unless you have a very recognizable voice. Or you can say, my friend has.
Sure, as many of my patients say, by the way, doctor, my friend has.
Yeah, because we have a world-renowned urologist on the line here. Plus, you'll get a free book, 888-874-4888. Your next point in five ways to reinvigorate your sex, your love life, is pay attention to your body's rhythms. This is such a good point, Dr. Danoff.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't feel that fatigue affects sexual energy. I mean, I encourage my patients to pay, you know, very close attention to the ways in which their body responds to different emotional and physical conditions. Fundamentally, be aware of what I call your body's rhythm. Your sexual response will change, no doubt about it, with stress, fatigue, anxiety or sickness. So you've got to really be aware of that. Maybe sex is better suited to you in the morning. Maybe your sexual urge is in the middle of the night. So you got to be aware of what's going on both in your body mentally and physically, and you've got to pay attention to those subtle changes.
And also, in terms of rhythms, I think it's the wise man who syncs up. This is what my fiancé, Brian, talks about, and I think it's very wise. He says, a skilled lover plugs into a woman's breath and her pelvic thrusts to follow her lead. This is a man, right? Listen to her vocalizations because there may be a pattern, and you can match your movements to that rhythm. And then he suggests, rather than the old in and out, try rotating your hips. It'll make for a different kind of clitoral stimulation, and the absence of thrusting will help you last longer. Don't you think that's all pretty true?
Absolutely. I agree with him 100%. I speak both as a practicing urologic surgeon and as a husband and a lover. So I definitely agree with your man. He's giving good advice.
Yeah. I'm a lucky girl.
In more ways than one, Deanna.
Yes, I feel very fortunate. And I just wanted to mention, my mother died last Wednesday, the 2nd of August.
My goodness.
And she was she lived to be 95, and she had a peaceful ending. She'd just taken a warm bath, almost like being back in the womb. And she was sexually active until she was widowed for a third time. But she was sexually active until she was about 91. And her mother before her was sexually active until she was also about the same age. So I have, and I'm grateful to my mother because not only did she have nice open attitudes about sexuality and it was my father who, when I was just a fifth grade, who actually took the lead on talking to us about sex and giving us the facts of life. When Lori, my sister, and I were captured in the car on a long trip back from Marin County back to L.A. And I had a real openness from my parents about sexuality. And it probably accounts in part for why I'm in this profession.
Well,
so I'm just honoring my mother. She had a good run, and she was a good woman, and I love her very much. So I just wanted to mention that in honor of my mama.
Well, my condolences to go out to you and your family on the loss of your mom.
Thank you.
And I think, you know, what you just said, it's so important that the parent or a parent, and particularly true of a man, again, I'm sure a lot of what I say can address women, but, my expertise is men. So for a father, you know, to transmit the essence of sexuality, of penis power to his son in a sensible, non-macho, non-confrontational way, and makes for a healthy young man. I remember pretty long ago when my son was 4 or 5, we were, you know, taking a shower together, as I think is appropriate for a father and a son. And
yes.
He said, you know, Dad, you know, when will my penis be as big as yours?
Mm-hmm.
And I took his hand, and I put his hand on top of mine, 5 fingers to 5 fingers, and I said, you know, son, when your hand becomes as big as mine, and it surely will, your penis will be just like mine. So,
such,
you know,
a good lesson for your son, really.
Yeah. And to this day, my son is sexually very well oriented and very happy, and I think he's transmitting that message to his son.
No doubt. And I can see, you know, my daughter and son got very good sex education. They couldn't help it, since their mother was a sex therapist, is a sex therapist. But and it's really nice for me to see my daughter and son-in-law with their sons and my grandsons, and because they're so open and they're giving good, healthy messages across the board, not just about sexuality.
Right. It's a lot about communicating both with your partner, with your children, with your grandchildren,
mm-hmm.
Openness, sensibility when talking about it, not being afraid to speak up, and yet at the same time not be too prying, allow a child, you know, to explore, to fall down, scrape his knee, you know, cut his chin or her chin. So it's a very, very, very delicate balance when we deliver sex education to the next generation.
It is, and too many parents, I fear, do not do it. And after all, silence is a message, too, that sex, and I have a lot of clients who come out of families like this, sex is embarrassing, it was never mentioned in the home. So then the myths start, and you address a whole bunch of myths in your book.
Yes.
And they start. What do you think are... Well, we'll come back to the 5 invigorating ways, but what do you think are some of the top myths, the top misunderstandings for men? And maybe even for women. Maybe there's no top.
Well, you know, I think this whole issue of size.
Yes.
That every man dreams, you know, of a longer penis. So at the outset, let me say to your listeners that there's no way of making your penis longer. I mean, it is genetically determined, and it is what it is. And
yes.
You mentioned a moment ago that I've seen, you know, 100,000 penises more than can fill the Rose Bowl, and I've seen, you know, lots of women attached to those penises, and I've never heard in my 30-plus years of practice a woman coming in to say to me, Dr. Danoff, can you make my man's penis longer or fatter or wider? What I have heard them say is, can you make it a little firmer and attach it to a sweeter, nicer guy?
Yeah.
You know, preferably with a Platinum American Express card. So
yeah, right.
the reality is that all the action, 99% of the action, in the penis is in the glands, in the tip. It's by far the most sensitive. And in a woman, I'm still searching for the elusive G-spot. In a woman, the most sensitive area is the clitoris, and it's right at the apex of the vagina, and it's under the urethra and on top of the pubic bone. So all of the action is up front. Now, I'm not saying that there are some people who prefer a bigger penis or a smaller penis, or some people have, you know, this image, just like some men like huge breasts and some men like teeny breasts. But the majority of people fall right in the middle. So I think that's one of the great myths we've got to take off the table.
I agree with you. Because Microsoft is here in Seattle and Amazon, and they hire Indian software programmers.
Right.
And, of course, in India, sex education is really almost non-existent. It's starting to get better.
Right.
So some of my sex therapy really has to be sex education.
Got it.
And just yesterday I had another Indian client who knew nothing about the clitoris.
Huh.
So I have my little puppet, my little hand puppet.
The talking clitoris.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it's important for men and women to know that there are 6,000 to 8,000 nerve endings in the clitoris, and that the G-spot may be the root of the clitoris, and there are about 4,000 nerve endings in a penis, and all that's behind the head.
The glands, the tip.
The glands, yeah.
Yeah. So I don't hold myself out to be an expert on either the clitoris or the G-spot, but I certainly am an expert on the tip of the penis.
Right.
And, you know, some men get pleasure in the shaft, but the majority of what we feel, the most sensitive part is clearly the glans, penis. And it doesn't matter if a man is circumcised or uncircumcised. In the erect penis, in an uncircumcised male, it's like a turtleneck sweater, which just falls back over the head and rests on the neck. So
right.
It's out there and it's up front. And woe be the man that subjects himself to what we call phalloplasty, the surgical attempt.
Oh, yes. That's not a good thing.
Not a good thing. It can't be done at any price. And believe me, Deanna, if it could be done, I'd have been doing it for the last 25 years, and I'd be retired on an island in the South Pacific.
Yeah, that's right. I know.
But it just can't be done, so...
And also, I think that the listeners should know that based on research spanning more than 80 years and an extensive analysis of 33 studies, and all of these are documented in Elizabeth Lloyd's book, The Case of the Female Orgasm, and 25% of women, according to these studies, are able to reach orgasm through intercourse. And so that means the man really should become good at cunnilingus, at oral sex, because she's more likely to have an orgasm that way. But it's also, and this is related to penis size, it's the bottom third, the third closest to the outside of the woman's vagina, that is the most sensitive.
Right.
And maybe with cervix stimulation or G-spot stimulation, she might reach an orgasm through intercourse.
Yeah, I'm sure. Look, I'm sure there are all variations on this basic theme, and a lot of reaching an orgasm, particularly for a woman, is psychogenic. There's a lot of emotional factors that go in. It's just as physical stimulation. You know, a penis is not a cucumber. So there's got to be lips, there's got to be soft music, there's got to be touch, there's got to be caressing, there's got to be mutual feeling of respect. So, you know, all of those things, you know, surround the penis or surround the vagina.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's go back to your five ways to reinvigorate. You know, you touched on it a little bit, but let's say a little more about it. Don't confine sex to the nighttime, you say. Now, is it true, Dr. Danoff, that for many men, because of erotic dreams and maybe nocturnal erections that they have during REM sleep, that levels of testosterone may be as much as 14 times higher in the morning?
I'm not sure about 14 times higher, but okay. It is a scientific fact that your circulating testosterone is highest in the morning.
In the morning, yeah.
You know, testosterone is what drives the libido.
You're right.
That is the substance of desire, testosterone.
Mm-hmm.
Hypothetically, a man should have the most desire and be raring to go at his best in the early morning. Now, obviously, we're trying to catch the 7 o'clock train, the 8 o'clock ferry, the 10 o'clock elevator, who knows what. it's tough. But I think sex in the morning is great. I mean, if you look at sex in the evening, you're usually fatigued, stressed out at the end of the day, and perhaps your sex problem is really a fatigue problem. So, yeah, absolutely. Do it in the morning. See if you can duck out in the middle of the afternoon.
And you write that morning sex is an especially good way to break the routine. And also you say, what a terrific way to start the day.
I agree, boy, I'll tell you.
And it is, if you have to miss jogging or some other form of exercise, let's remember that in vigorous sex is terrific aerobic exercise.
Oh, there's no question about it. Upper arm exercise, lower body exercise,
uh-huh.
cardiovascular fitness, gets those webs out of your brain, nothing more invigorating. What a way to start the day. And which brings me to another point about the importance of physical fitness for good sex, for sexuality.
Yes.
Cardiovascular fitness. You have to have your blood pressure under control. If you are a diabetic, you must have your diabetes under control. If you have hypercholesterolemia, you have to lower your cholesterol.
Mm-hmm.
So good sex equates to good physical fitness, and the two go hand in hand.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that there are some guys who don't bring up their sexual dysfunctions with their doctors.
And sexual dysfunction can be a red flag, Deanna. I mean, it could be the early sign of uncontrolled hypertension.
Mm-hmm.
It could be the early sign of diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
Be the early sign of hypercholesterolemia, thyroid problems. So when a person approaches me with ED, I don't just say, here, take a dozen Cialis, Viagra, come in and we'll shoot you up with prostaglandin E1. What I want to do first is do a complete metabolic evaluation of that patient to see if there is not some underlying medical problem which is accounting for his ED. So it can be an early red flag, and men should pay attention to that.
You know, Viagra was approved, and I remember this. I then had a show in Hawaii where I lived at the time. It was approved in April of 1998.
Right.
And thank goodness, and I bet you recall this, it got a lot of guys in to see their doctors because they wanted a prescription to try this Viagra.
Right.
And then the smart doctors like you could possibly uncover some red flags.
There's no question that the ED drugs have gotten more men into the urologist. For them, the underlying reasons get the drugs, and for the urologist, it's underlying reasons to, maybe there's more than what meets the eye accounting for your erectile dysfunction. I want to tell you an interesting story about how Viagra came to be. It was a serendipitous invention or discovery. So,
yes.
Viagra is basically a vasodilator, means dilates blood vessels, allow more blood to flow. And
yes.
So it was introduced by the drug company as a replacement for nitroglycerin for men who had coronary artery disease.
Mm-hmm.
Nitroglycerin was generic. They were looking for something they could make a few bucks on. So they had the two groups. They gave one group the Viagra, one group the nitroglycerin, and they realized that Viagra was not a very good vasodilator for coronary artery vessels. Mm-hmm. So they called the study off. They asked everybody to give back the samples.
Yes.
And the men in the Viagra group were very reluctant to give back the samples. And they asked why. Well, they said, you know, this magic pill got me an erection that I haven't seen in 20 years.
Uh-huh.
And so serendipitously, that's the way Viagra came to be an ED drug. So it's a
yeah,
very
no,
safe.
I'm familiar with the story. And how about the story about the urologist speaking to meeting, and he dropped his pants?
That was
the audience. Tell that story. I think it's very amusing, but it surely got everybody's attention, didn't it?
Yeah, well, so in the treatment of ED now, today, 21st century, one of the modalities we use is, we call it injection therapy, in which we actually inject what's called a vasoactive substance directly into the base of the penis knot with a very tiny little needle. So the fellow that discovered this was a urologist. I mean, that goes back probably 20 or more years. And at a national meeting, the guy actually got up on stage, talked about this new vasoactive drug, literally dropped his trousers in front of, 2,000 urologists, self-injected them, and there before the eyes of the dismayed crowd, an erection, a beautiful, firm erection appeared.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was an astounding demonstration of the effectiveness of this vasoactive drug, done in the most dramatic setting. So it was really quite something to see.
Something to see.
Yeah.
So as we wind up the show, we have about 10 more minutes, but so let's talk about your last point, which is, for ways to reinvigorate your love life, is to look into alternative sex practices. And I think that's a very good suggestion. This is another way to bring more dopamine, and because you're getting novelty.
So, I mean, look, countless volumes have been written about this subject, from the Kama Sutra to articles in Cosmopolitan. And the book, I don't try to... It's not a how-to book. It's not a position book. But what I do is I raise the question, when is the time you tried something other than the missionary position, or
mm-hmm.
up, or lying down, or sitting down, or who knows what? So I don't so much go into alternate sex practices, but I say, be creative. Don't be restricted. Practice safe sex above all. We have HIV AIDS out there. There's no question about it. So, as I say, no holds, HOLDS barred.
Mm-hmm.
But be adventuresome as long as it's safe sex. And this is true for heterosexual couples, for homosexual or gay couples, for transgender people. So this goes across the board. A man is a man is a man is a man. If I'm heterosexual, I'm attracted to a woman. If I'm gay, I'm attracted to a man. If I'm bi, I'm attracted to both. But at the bottom of the barrel is a man with the same desires, the same anxieties, the same trepidation. Really, all men are basically alike.
Yeah, and women probably need to have a little more seduction of their minds, because women are like crock pots.
Right.
We take time to warm up.
Right.
So I suggest to the guys that they plan ahead, that they send, now this would be a good time for text messaging, a sexy text message telling her you love her and how soft and smooth her skin is, or how you've been thinking about the smell of her hair, or that you can't wait to taste her. And so I think, if a man seduces her mind, then she'll want you to seduce her body later on.
Absolutely. And we've made this observation together and independently. You know, men are much more visual than women. And as you say, a woman is more like this pot that needs a lot of stirring, a lot of warming, a lot of touching around the edges, a lot of flipping and turning. And so there's no question that women are more complex. I mean, for a woman to reach an orgasm is infinitely more complex a process than for a man to reach an orgasm. Now, I don't believe I ever said that before, but the more I think about that, and I think it's original, the more true I think it is.
I think it is true. I mean, you rarely, I've only had one or two men in my practice who had trouble ejaculating, and in one case, the couple really wanted to conceive a child, so it was important for him to ejaculate in her. So there is a sleeve that you can get at a sex toy store, and this guy was able to masturbate putting his penis in the sleeve, which is like a vagina.
Right.
And then he learned gradually to ejaculate, and of course you can clean this sleeve out. So anyway, the bottom line is they are now 7 months pregnant. So.
Fantastic. Well, there is another entity which it's more subtle. So there are many men that have the sensation of orgasm and no fluid comes out, and that's a consequence of what we call retrograde or backward ejaculation. So they actually ejaculate back into their bladder and then urinate the sperm out with the first urination. So there are a number of medical problems which will cause that. There are a number of medications which will cause that. So sometimes the inability to ejaculate dictates an underlying medical problem or an adverse reaction to a drug that the patient may be taking. So there are ways for the urologist to make that differentiation and correct the problem. So
yeah, I always make sure the guy has been checked out by a urologist. It's really important.
Retrograde ejaculation is a real tricky entity. Yes.
Yes. Yes. So, in looking to alternative sex practices, by the way, any of you want that free book? You got to call pretty soon here. Coming to the end of the program, or of course I will in the write up. I'll write the title and we'll and hopefully people will buy it. People can get this. They can get the audio versions of the book too, and all of that. Right?
It's on Amazon as of today, and there's the book, and it's available in all bookstores and online. So yeah, I think they'll find it interesting, medically accurate, written in an understanding way, tongue-in-cheek. I think most people will find it very helpful.
Oh, I agree. It's a very reader-friendly book. You don't have to be an expert to read this book and to benefit from it and to be educated. Those of us who are educated about sexuality typically have much better sex. And so it's important to be educated. And the other thing is that if a woman is relaxed and she's more likely to have good sex. So that's part of seducing her mind. And if she feels safe with her man, that's another difference between men and women. You know, her amygdala, the fear center of her brain, has to take a nap for her to reach orgasm. And all right, now you have you write, have you tried letting your partner get on top to control the action? That can help a lot of women be on top. Or do reverse cowgirl, where she's facing her partner's feet, and that can be exciting because then the man gets to watch her buttocks, as she rides his penis. So all of that is good, too. And then you have doggy style, and that's good because the penis can go deeper with doggy style. Correct?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yep. So look, I mean, all of these things are helpful, and I mm-hmm. would certainly leave it up to the listeners to be inventive and try things that they haven't tried before. With the one, you know, caution, just make sure you practice safe sex, and then for me, everything is on the table. Everything goes, whatever floats your boat. I'm as the kids would say, I'm down with it.
Right, right. Well, that's part that makes you a really good urologist because you are so open and you do suggest so many things. And as you write, the possibilities are endless. And you say, if you cannot conjure up some creative ideas on your own, do not be afraid to go out and find a book. Of course, I suggest Dr. Danoff's book. I suggested it to a lot of people with some nice results. Or go to a sex therapist or ask a friend for some good tips. And people are happy when they have they're much happier when they have a good sex life. So I'm so pleased that you returned to this program, Dr. Danoff, and I'm also congratulations on the second edition of your book, but it's actually the third edition if you count Penis Power as the first.
It's definitely changed in its form, but as my grandmother says, it's basically the same shtick.
Uh-huh.
All right.
How long did your grandmother live?
She was in her 80s. I don't remember her very, very well. I moved away from where she lived, you know, at a relatively young age when I went off to college and medical school and the military. But
right.
I do remember as being a kind old lady. I don't remember she was from the old country. You know, we ever got into any discussion about sexuality because it just, you know, it just wasn't done in our culture. But
yeah.
But she was a kind lady.
Yes, yes, and. That's how I'm remembering my mother, too. Okay. Thank you, Dr. Danoff.